Great Plays. This afternoon, the Blue Network presents another performance in its Great Plays series for 1941-1942. The play is Monsieur Poirier's son-in-law, and the authors, Émile Augier and Jules Sandeau. Our commentator on each play of the series and translator of today's great play is Barrett H. Clark, the executive director of the Dramatists' Play Service. And he will tell us something of the background of Monsieur Poirier's son-in-law. Mr. Clark.
It's not often that the acknowledged classics of the past can be wholeheartedly enjoyed by later generations. Most of us are content to take the great achievements of earlier days on faith, without ever bothering to determine their merits by first-hand contact with them. For this reason, it is surprising and pleasant to discover every so often that some book or painting or play we have heard about, but carefully avoided, is actually alive and seems, as it were, really to speak to us of ourselves and our immediate concerns. Do you remember Mr. Dooley's comment on Richard Wagner? That his music was not half so bad as it sounds. Most of us feel that way about classics. That is how I feel about the classic play we are now about to broadcast. Monsieur Poirier's son-in-law is one of the high points of French comedy. The play is nearly 100 years old. It has survived the praises of generations of critics. It has even survived the countless headaches and heartaches of unnumbered school and college students who have had to analyze its irregular verbs and explain its syntax in the classroom. In France, up to the moment when that country ceased to be free, it was one of those pleasant plays that sent entire families to the theater Saturday evenings. Mama and Papa and the children. All of whom knew the play already, but were always ready to see it again. Such occasions were holidays very much like those we celebrate by taking the children and ourselves to the circus. I recall how, when I was a student in Paris, living with an old-fashioned French family, we all discussed Monsieur Poirier for a month before the big night, when at last we crowded into our one-horse cab and rattled through the streets to the famous Comédie Française. Which was an entirely proper way to go to the theater, I think. There was an air of festive gaiety on the occasion. The play we saw was, of course, preeminently respectable, not a line to bring the blush of shame to any cheek, while the idea on which it was based was one dear to the heart of the French people. That the solid virtues of common sense, sobriety, and family solidarity are the foundation stones of civilization. Well and good. But the surprising thing about this comedy is that it is neither dull nor didactic. Our comedy today is the joint work of two French writers, the dramatist Émile Augier and the novelist Jules Sandeau. The basic plot is said to have been furnished by Sandeau and the play itself by Augier. Augier was born in 1820, lived an uneventful existence, wrote 27 plays, and died in 1889. Those who know Paris may remember in the little square facing the Odeon Theater, a pedestal surmounted by the bronze bust of an elderly gentleman who looks rather like President Garfield. This benevolent gentleman was Augier, successful and popular playwright and guardian of hearth and home. Monsieur Poirier's son-in-law sets before us simply and movingly the dilemma of the lower middle-class tradesman who a century ago rose to financial eminence and bought for his daughter and his own snobbish satisfaction a penniless nobleman with only his fine manners and ancient name to recommend him. The theme, you will realize, is not wholly of antiquarian interest, since the eternal clash between newly acquired wealth and family tradition is still a living issue. But it is not the theme alone that appeals to us. It is the revelation of character in terms of high comedy. Every line in the play serves to throw into relief the basic humanity of its character. And we are left at the end with the impression that we understand the people, and understanding them, feel our common kinship with them. The authors have painted for us a series of living portraits. Our play opens at the house of Monsieur Poirier.
I repeat, Corporal, Monsieur le Marquis cannot possibly receive. He is not up yet.
What, at 9? The sun rises slowly during the honeymoon. What time is breakfast served here?
At 11.
You will lay another place. Is this today's paper?
Yes. February 15th, 1846.
Give it to me, and then announce me to Monsieur le Marquis.
But who are you?
The Duc de Montmirail.
Oh, a thousand pardons, Excellency. Your uniform, a corporal.
Why, it's you.
My dear Gaston.
My dear Hector, I'm so glad to see you.
And are you?
You couldn't possibly have arrived at a better time.
How do you mean?
But let me tell you, But, my poor fellow, the way you're dressed up. Who would recognize under that tunic one of the princes of youth? The perfect model of prodigal sons.
My dear fellow, please don't joke about those things. It was all very well in the past, but today the Cross of Honor is my one ambition. I would willingly shed a pint of my blood for it.
A real soldier, I see.
Yes, yes. I love my profession. It's the only one for a ruined gentleman. I know my duty, I do it, and I'm content.
The important point is that you are content. Are you in Paris for some time?
Just a month. You know how I've arranged my manner of living?
Tell me.
Oh, it's very clever. Before leaving, I placed the remains of my fortune with a certain banker, about 100,000 francs, the income from which allows me during 1 month in the year to live as I used to.
Uh-huh.
So that I live for 1 month at a 6,000 francs rate, and for the rest of the year, on 6 sous a day. Naturally, I've chosen carnival season for my prodigalities. It began yesterday, but my first visit was to you.
Thanks. But I shan't hear if you're staying anywhere but here.
Oh, well, I don't want to be in the way.
Oh, you shan't be. There's a small pavilion here at the end of the garden.
Well, to be perfectly frank, I'm not afraid of you, but of myself.
Hmm?
You lead a family life here. There's your wife, your father-in-law.
You imagine that simply because I have married the daughter of a retired dry goods merchant, my home is a temple of boredom? That my wife brought with her a heap of middle-class virtues? That all that remains for me is write an inscription over my door, "Here lies Gaston Marquis de Prel"? Oh, make no mistake, my friend. I live like a prince. Race my horses, gamble like the devil, buy pictures, have the finest chef in Paris. In short, marriage has not changed me in the least, except to rid me of my creditors.
So your wife and father-in-law leave you free?
Absolutely. My wife is a nice little boarding school miss. As for Monsieur Poirier, my father-in-law...
How did you happen to meet him?
He had some money he wanted to invest. It was the merest chance. I lack sufficient guarantee as a debtor, but I offered him enough as a son-in-law. I made inquiries about his person, assured myself that his fortune had been honorably acquired, and then, by Jove, I married his daughter.
Mm-hmm. And he gave you...
The old fellow had 4 million. Now he has only 3.
A dowry of 1 million?
Or better still, he agreed to pay my debts.
Oh, and then?
He insisted on not being separated from his daughter and agreed to defray all household expenses so long as we lived with him.
Oh, very neat.
Oh, wait a moment.
Something else?
He bought back the Chateau de Prel, and I expect any day to find the deeds under my plate at breakfast.
Well, a delightful father-in-law.
Wait a moment.
More?
As soon as the contract was signed, he came to me, took my hands in his, and made profuse excuses for being no more than 60 years old. But he assured me that he hurried on to the age of 80.
Really? You are the most fortunate of men.
And wait. Hmm? The women have forgiven me.
Ah.
As I was saying, you have arrived in the nick of time.
Well, why?
Don't you understand? Hmm. You, my born second.
A duel?
Yes. A nice little duel, as in the days of our youth. Well, what do you say? Is the old Marquis de Prel dead? Are you thinking of burying him yet?
Well, whom are you fighting with and why?
The Vicomte de Pogrimaud. Oh. Gambling quarrel.
Gambling quarrel? You mean a woman?
Yeah, that's it.
An intrigue so soon? That's bad.
But how could I help it? Habit, certain residue of my former love, the temptation of forbidden fruit, pleasure of cutting out that little fool Pogrimaud whom I detest.
Has he sent his seconds to you?
I expect them at any moment. Mm-hmm. You and Grandeur will help me.
Very well.
Of course, you will stay with me.
Oh, delighted.
Good. Though this is carnival season, you don't intend to parade about as a hero, do you?
Oh, no. I've written to my tailor.
Wait. I hear someone talking. Oh, it's my father-in-law. You'll now have an opportunity of seeing him with his old friend Verdelet, a former partner. You're in luck. How are you, Monsieur Verdelet?
Your servant, monsieur.
A dear friend of mine, my dear Monsieur Poirier, eh? The Duc de Montmirail.
Corporal of the African cavalry.
Oh, most honored, Monsieur le Duc.
More honor than you think, dear Monsieur Poirier. For Monsieur le Duc has been good enough to accept the hospitality I have offered him.
I beg your pardon, monsieur, for having accepted an invitation which my friend Gaston has possibly been a trifle too hasty in offering.
Monsieur le Marquis, my son-in-law, need never feel obliged to consult me before inviting his friends to stay with him here. The friends of our friends.
Yes. Very well, Monsieur Poirier. Hector will stay in the garden pavilion. Is it ready?
I shall attend to it at once.
I'm very sorry, Monsieur, to cause you any annoyance.
Oh, none at all. Monsieur Poirier will be only too happy.
Oh, too happy.
And you will, of course, give orders that the little blue coupe be placed at his disposal?
The one I usually use?
Oh, I positively refuse.
But I can easily hire one. There's a stand at the end of the street.
Now let us take a look at the stables, my dear Hector. Yesterday I got a superb Arabian. Tell me what you think of it. Come.
With your permission, Monsieur.
Of course, Monsieur Leroux.
That son-in-law of yours is mighty obsequious with you.
Mm-hmm.
You told me beforehand you'd know how to make him respect you.
I'm doing what pleases me. I prefer to be loved than feared, and I advise you to mind your own business.
Well, this is my own business, I tell you. Aren't we partners? When you grovel before that marquis, I have a hard time keeping my temper.
Grovel? That marquis? You think I'm dazzled by his title? I don't care a snap of my finger for the nobility. Ability and virtue are the only social distinctions I recognize, and before which I bow down.
Is your son-in-law virtuous?
You make me tired.
Oh, but I owe to you. But it's all going eventually to your daughter after your son-in-law has ruined you.
Ruined me?
Yes, in 10 years' time.
You're crazy.
At the rate he's going now, you will know only too well it won't take him long to run through his money.
That's my business.
If you were the only one concerned, I'd never open my mouth. But it happens that your daughter is my goddaughter.
Yes, and I was a fool to give you that right over. Let me read my paper. Another one has arrived at the top. Monsieur Michaud the Ironmaster has just been appointed a peer of France.
And what do I care?
Does it make no difference to you to see a man of our class arrive at the top? Why, you have a right to look forward to becoming a peer someday, and you ask, why do I care?
Yes, but heaven preserve me from aspiring to the peerage. And heaven preserve my country should I become a peer.
But why? Can't Monsieur Michaud fill his position?
Monsieur Michaud is not only a businessman, but a very great man of personal merit.
Yes.
Molière's father was an upholsterer. But that is no reason why every upholsterer's son should believe himself a writer.
Yeah, and I tell you, commerce is a true school for statesmen.
No, a bark is not a ship. A little captain is not necessarily a true pilot. And France is no commercial house. A businessman like you or me attends to his own little concerns for 30 years. He makes his fortune and one fine day closes his shop and sets up as a statesman. With no more effort than that. Oh, how simple. Good Lord, you might just as well say, I have measured so many yards of cloth, and therefore know how to play the violin.
I don't exactly see what connection...
Instead of thinking about governing France, learn to govern your own home.
How are you, Father?
Toinette.
How is everything? Hello, Godfather. Are you going to lunch with us? How nice you are.
He is nice, but he just said that your husband is ruining me. Didn't you?
Yes, but all you've got to do is to pull tight your purse strings.
It would be much simpler if the young man had some occupation.
Well, it seems to me he is very much occupied as it is.
Yes, spending money from morning till night. I'd prefer a more lucrative occupation.
What, for instance? He can't sell cloth.
He wouldn't be able to. Let him take a position that befits his rank. An embassy, for instance.
An embassy?
Yes.
But you can't take an embassy the way you take cold. Your son-in-law has his own ideas.
Only one, to be lazy.
Oh, that's not fair, Father. My husband has very fine ideals.
He's been living here the past 3 months on the fat of the land. Now it's time for him to go to work. A man is always indulgent toward his wife during the honeymoon. But now, Toinette, if you ask him in a nice way, in the evening, when you're taking down your hair...
Father.
Well, that's the way Madame Poirier used to get me to promise to take her to the opera. I always took her the next day.
But I'd never dare speak to my husband on so serious a subject.
Your dowry will surely give you good enough right to speak.
He would only shrug his shoulders and not answer.
But does he do that when you talk to him?
No, but...
Oh, you look away. So your husband treats you a little, I've been afraid of that.
Ah, have you... Any reason to complain of him?
No, Father.
Well, doesn't he love you?
I don't say that.
Then what do you say?
Nothing.
Come. Come, my dear, you should speak frankly with your old friends. Are you unhappy?
I haven't the right to be. My husband is very kind and good.
Well?
Is that enough? He's kind and good. But he pays no more attention to you than to some pretty doll. Is that it?
Well, it's my fault. I'm so timid with him. I've never dared open my heart. I'm sure he thinks me a little boarding school miss who wanted to become a marquise.
A fool.
Why don't you explain to him?
Well, I've tried to more than once, but the tone of his first answer was so different from what I thought it should be that I couldn't go on.
Did he?
There are certain kinds of intimacy that must be encouraged. The heart has a reticence of its own. How can I tell Gaston that it wasn't his title that pleased me, but his manners, his mind, his bearing, his contempt for the pettiness of life? How can I tell him that he's the man of my dreams? How can I do that if he stops me at once with some joke?
Well, that shows the boy's in a good humor.
No. It's because his wife bores him.
Huh? Toinette, do you bore your husband?
I'm afraid I do.
Well, I tell you, it isn't you. It's his own confounded laziness that bores him. A husband doesn't love his wife very long when he has nothing else to do. Why did I always adore your mother?
Why?
Because I never had time to think about her.
Well, but your husband has 24 hours a day to love you.
That's 12 too many.
Why, you're opening my eyes.
Let him take a position, and everything will turn out satisfactorily. Now, just leave the matter in my hands.
Are you going to attack the question at once?
No.
Oh.
After lunch. I've noticed that the Marquis is in splendid humor after his meals.
Let us return to the library.
Yeah.
Well, Hector, What do you say? Can you imagine a happier man than myself?
I must confess you make me very envious. You almost reconcile me to the idea of marriage.
You can't deny, Hector, that I'm downright lucky. Monsieur Poirier, something has been weighing on my conscience.
Oh?
You know, you think of nothing but how to make my existence one long series of good times. Will you never give me a chance to repay you? Try now, I beg you, to think of something I might do for you in return. Anything in my power.
Well, since you're in so good a humor, let me have a quarter of an hour's conversation with you, a serious conversation.
I shall be glad to retire.
Oh, no, please don't, monsieur. Be good enough to stay with us. This is to be a kind of a family council.
Well, in that case...
Well, you're not in the way at all, any more than is Monsieur Verdelet.
A family council?
Yes.
Are you going to give me a legal advisor?
far from it, my dear Gaston. Let us sit down.
Monsieur Poirier has the floor.
Thank you. You say you are happy, my dear Gaston. That is the finest recompense I could have.
I ask nothing better than to increase my gratitude twofold.
You have spent 3 months of your honeymoon in the lap of idleness and luxury, and I think that part of the romance is enough. It's now time to give your attention to hard facts.
Why, you talk like a book, I do declare. Very well. Let us give our attention to history.
Yes. Now, what do you intend to do?
Today?
And tomorrow. The future. You surely have some idea.
Oh, of course. Today, I intend to do what I did yesterday. Tomorrow, what I did today.
But seriously, son-in-law... Doesn't this lazy life you are leading seem to threaten the happiness of a young household?
No, not in the least.
Aren't you afraid that in time you may be bored, dear?
You fail to do yourself justice, my dear.
I'm not vain enough to believe I can be everything in your life. And I must confess I should be very happy to see you follow Monsieur de Montmeyron's example.
You mean I should enlist?
Oh, no.
Then what?
We want you to take a position worthy of your name.
Well, there are but three. In the army, the church, and agriculture. Choose.
Still, monsieur, I might answer.
Oh, let us drop the subject, Monsieur Poirier.
Well?
I am bound by gratitude.
But,
let us say no more about this.
But, sir, there are some persons in the small waiting room who say they have an appointment with Monsieur Poirier.
Well, ask them to wait a moment. I'll be there directly. Your creditors, son-in-law.
Yours, my dear father-in-law. I've given them to you.
Well, Monsieur Le Marquis, it is very unfortunate for your honor that my honesty pays your debts. Only, as I am not a gentleman, I warn you I shall do my best to get out of this fix as cheaply as I can.
You must be very clever indeed to make any sort of compromise with those highway robbers. They are masters of the situation.
We'll see. I'll go at once, so they shan't get impatient.
Don't wait. They'll devour you if you do.
Poor Monsieur Poirier. I feel sorry for him. This latest revelation takes away all his pleasure in paying my debts.
Sir, Monsieur de Ligny and de Chassereau would like to speak to Monsieur le Marquis on behalf of Monsieur de Pontgrimont.
Very well. You receive the gentleman, Hector.
Yes.
You don't need me to help you arrange the party.
A party?
Yes. I won a good deal of money from Pontgrimont and promised him a chance to take revenge. Tomorrow sometime in the morning will be satisfactory for me, Hector.
Good. When shall I see you again?
At 3, here. Mm-hmm. Would you like to go to the opera tonight, Antoinette?
If you are going.
I am. What gown are you going to wear?
Any one you like.
Well, makes no difference to me. I mean, you look very pretty in any of them.
But you have such excellent taste, dear. You ought to advise me.
My dear child, I am not a fashion magazine. All you have to do is to watch the great ladies and make them your models. Madame de Noan, Madame de Vipry.
Madame de Morger.
Why Madame de Morger rather than anyone else?
Because she pleases you more.
Where did you get that idea?
The other evening at the opera, you paid her a rather long visit in her box. She's very pretty. Is she clever, too?
Very.
Oh, why don't you tell me when I do something that doesn't please you?
I have never failed to do so.
You never said you were displeased.
Because you never gave me an occasion.
That's because I'm afraid you'll think me childish and vain.
What if you were a little proud? Is that a crime?
I swear I haven't an ounce of pride.
My dear, you haven't a single fault. And do you know you have quite won the admiration of Montmirat? You ought to be very proud of that. Hector is difficult to please.
Less so than you.
You think me difficult?
I have no illusions about myself. I know very well what I need in order to be worthy of you. But if you will only take the trouble to guide me, tell me something about the world you know. I love you so much, I would change myself completely.
I could not but lose by the change, madame. And furthermore, I am only a middling teacher. There is but one school in which to learn what you think you lack. Society. Study it.
Very well, then. I shall study Madame de Morger.
Again? Are you doing me the honor to be jealous? Take care, my dear. That failing is distinctly middle class. When I am not with you, pray do not worry about what I'm doing. Merely say to yourself, he is dissipating his imperfections in order that he may bring to me 1 hour of perfection. Or nearly so.
I think that your greatest imperfection is your absence.
Well, neatly turned. Thank you. Where in the world did your father find the heart he gave you?
Oh, don't judge my father too severely, dear. He's good and generous, but his ideas are narrow. He can't see beyond his own individual rights. It's the fault of his mind, not his heart. Now, if you consider I have done my duty, forgive my father for that one moment of agony.
I should be very ungrateful to refuse you anything.
You won't blame him, will you?
No. Since you wish it, Marquise. Marquise, you hear?
Call me your wife. The only title of which I'm proud.
You do love me a little.
Haven't you noticed it, you ungrateful man?
Oh, yes. But I like to hear you say it. Especially at this moment.
You smile. What are you thinking about?
Would you like to take a ride with me in the Bois?
Yes. Oh, yes. Please, let's.
What a delightful ride. Charming spring weather. You might almost think it was April.
Really, aren't you bored?
With you, my dear? As a matter of fact, you're the most charming woman I know.
Compliments, monsieur?
Oh, no, no. No, the truth in its most brutal form. And what a delightful journey I have made into your mind and heart. How many undiscovered points I have found. Why, I've been living near you without knowing you. Like a Parisian in Paris.
And I don't displease you too much?
It is my place to ask you that question. I feel like a peasant who has been entertaining a queen in disguise. All at once, the queen puts on her crown, and the peasant feels embarrassed and makes excuses for not having been more attentive and hospitable.
Be assured, good peasant, that your queen blamed nothing except her own incognito.
For having kept it so long, cruel queen. Was it out of sheer coquetry? And to have another honeymoon? You have succeeded. Hitherto, I have been only your husband. Now I want to become your lover.
No. No, my dear Gaston. Remain my husband.
Hmm?
I think that a woman can cease to love her lover, never her husband.
Oh, so you are not romantic.
I am, but in my own way. My ideas on the subject are perhaps not fashionable, but they're deeply rooted in me, like childhood impressions. When I was a little girl, I could never understand how it was that my father and mother weren't related.
Hmm?
And ever since then, marriage has seemed to me the tenderest and closest of all relationships. To love a man who is not my husband seems contrary to nature.
The idea is rather of a Roman matron, my dear Antoinette. But keep them, for the sake of my honor and my happiness.
But take care. There is another side. I am jealous. I warn you. If there is only one man in the world I can love, I must have all his love. The day I discover that this is not so, I shall make no complaint or reproach, but the link will be broken. At once my husband will become a stranger to me. I should consider myself a widow.
Oh, the devil. Fear nothing, dear Antoinette. We shall live like two lovers, like Philemon and Baucis, with the exception of the hut. You don't insist on the hut, do you?
Not in the least.
I'm going to hold a brilliant celebration of our wedding, and I want you to eclipse all the other women and make all the men envious of me.
Must we proclaim our happiness so loud?
Don't you like entertainment?
I like everything that you like. Are you going to have company at dinner today?
No, tomorrow. Today we have only Momara. Why did you ask?
Should I dress?
Yes, because I want you to make married life attractive to Hector. Now we'd better return home. I shan't forget this happy day.
Nor I. How happy I am.
Do me the favor to stop making fun of me. I'm tired of being the butt of all your jokes.
Now, Monsieur Poirier, don't be angry.
I know very well that you think I'm of little account and that I'm not very intelligent, but...
Where did you get that idea?
But let me tell you, there are more brains in my little finger than there is in your whole body.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
I'm no Marquis.
Hush, not so loud. Someone might hear you.
Well, it makes no difference to me whether they do or not. I don't pretend to be a gentleman, thank heaven.
Do you think I have merits?
No, Monsieur, I do not.
Then why did you give me your daughter?
Why did I...
Possibly you had some afterthought?
Afterthought?
Allow me. Your daughter did not love me when you brought me to your home. And certainly it was not my debts which appealed to you and which caused the honor of your choice to fall upon me. Now, since it was not my title either, I am forced to assume that you must have had some afterthought.
And what of it, Monsieur? What if I did try to combine my own interests with my daughter's happiness?
I don't contest that, Monsieur Poirier.
Well, then?
I only say that you were wrong in one respect. Not to have had confidence in me.
Well, you're not a very encouraging sort of man.
Look here, my dear father-in-law. Can I help you in any way?
Eh?
That is, if I am good for anything.
I am ambitious.
Why, you're not blushing, are you? Why? With all the experience you've acquired in the realm of business, you might well aspire to any heights.
Oh, I don't pretend...
Now, my good Monsieur Poirier, what would suit you? A prefecture?
Why...
Nonsense. Council of State?
Why, I...
No. Diplomatic service? Let me see. The Turkish embassy is vacant at present.
Oh, well, I'm a stay-at-home. Besides, I don't understand Turkish.
Wait. The peerage... It would fit you to a T.
Oh, you really think so?
You must have a title.
Well, I don't insist upon such baubles.
You might be a count.
Oh, no, I'll be reasonable. A baronetcy would suffice.
Baron Poirier. Sounds well.
Yes. Baron Poirier.
I beg your pardon, but really, this is too funny.
Eh?
Baron. Monsieur Poirier. Baron.
He's been making fun of me.
Come here, Hector.
Huh?
Hector, you must come here. Hector, Do you know why Jean Gaston de Prale received 3 wounds from an arquebuse at the Battle of Erie?
No.
Do you know why Francois Gaston de Prale led the attack on La Rochelle?
What?
Why Louis Gaston de Prale was blown to pieces at La Hogue? Why Philippe Gaston de Prale captured 2 flags at Fontenoy? What? why my grandfather gave up his life at Quiberon. It was all in order that someday Monsieur Poirier might be peer of France and a baron.
What do you mean?
This is the secret of that little attack on me this morning. He wants to be a baron.
Oh?
Yes. And do you know, Monsieur Le Duc, why I have worked 14 hours a day for 30 years? Why I heaped up sou by sou 4 millions of cash while I deprived myself of everything but the bare necessities? It was all in order that someday Monsieur Le Marquis Gaston de Pré, who died neither at Quiberon nor Fontenay nor at Logue nor anywhere else, might die of old age on a feather bed after having spent his life doing nothing at all.
Well said, monsieur.
You are a born orator.
Sir, there are some gentlemen here who would like to see the apartment.
What apartment?
Monsieur Le Marquis.
Do they think this is a natural history museum?
Tell the gentleman to call again. Pardon me, son-in-law. I was so carried away by your gaiety. I forgot to mention that I am renting the first floor of my house.
What's that?
Yes. That is one of the little reforms I was speaking about. Of course, it goes without saying that I am renting the stables and carriages, too.
And my horses?
You will sell them.
And go on foot?
It'll do you good. You don't do half enough walking.
I shall, however, keep my own blue coupe. I'll lend it to you when you need it.
When the weather is nice.
Really, Monsieur Poirier, your home will soon become a center of marvelous pleasures. But I'm afraid that I should become a slave of luxury, and I shall therefore leave no later than tomorrow.
I'm sorry to hear it, but my home is not a prison. What career do you intend to follow? Medicine or law?
Who said anything about a career?
Or will you enter the Department of Roads and Bridges? For you will certainly be unable to keep up your rank on 9,000 francs income.
9,000 francs?
Well, the account is easy to make out. You receive 500,000 francs as my daughter's dowry. The wedding and installation took about 100,000. You have given 218,000 to your creditors. You have, therefore, 182,000 left, which, at the usual interest, will yield you 9,000 francs income. You see? Oh, take my word for it, my dear Gaston. Stay with me. You will be more comfortable than in a home of your own. Think of your children, who will not be sorry some day to find in the pockets of the Marquis de Presles the savings of old man Poiret. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh. You think it funny?
Indeed I do. So this is the modest and generous fruit tree of a father-in-law. At last you found your master.
You are right. Monsieur Poirier, you are rendering me a great service that you little dream of.
A service?
Yes, my dear fellow. I was about to make a fool of myself. Fall in love with my wife. Fortunately, Monsieur Poirier has put a stop to that.
Your wife's not to blame for the stupidity of her father. She's charming.
Nonsense. She's just like her father.
Not the least bit.
There is a family resemblance, I insist. I couldn't kiss her without thinking of the old fool. Now, I did want to sit at home with my wife by the fireside. But the moment it is to be a kitchen fireside...
Where are you going?
To Madame de Mauger. She's been waiting 2 hours already.
Gaston, don't go.
They want to make my life a hardship for me here. Make me feel penitent.
Now listen to me.
You can't persuade me.
Well, what about your duel?
Oh, that's so. I'd forgotten.
You're going to fight tomorrow at 2 in the Bois de Vincennes.
Well, very well. With this humor on me, Paul Grimaud is going to have a pleasant quarter hour tomorrow.
The Marquise.
Are you going out, dear?
Yes, madame.
Oh, I don't understand.
Very serious things are happening, madame.
What?
Well, your father is ambitious. He was counting on his son-in-law's title to get into the peerage. He's adopted childish measures in retaliation after Gaston refused to help him. I'm afraid it's you, however, who will bear the expenses of war.
How do you mean?
Well, if your father is making the house disagreeable to your Gaston, he will seek distraction elsewhere.
Distraction elsewhere?
You, madame, are the only person who can prevent disaster. If your father loves you, you must stand between him and Gaston. Make a truce between them at once. There's no harm done yet, and everything can be as it was.
No harm done yet. Everything can be as it... Mm-hmm. You make me very much afraid. Against whom am I to defend myself?
Against your father.
No. You're not telling me everything. What my father has done is not enough to take my husband from me in the space of a single day. He's making love to some woman, is he not?
Oh, no,
please,
madame.
Please, Monsieur the Duke, don't try to hide the truth. I have a rival.
Madame, do calm yourself.
I feel it. I know it. He's with her now.
No, madame, he loves you.
But he's just come to know me since an hour ago. It wasn't to me he felt he must tell of his anger. He went elsewhere with his troubles.
Milady, a letter from Monsieur le Marquis.
He's gone out. Leave it here. From whom does it come?
Madame de Monge's footman brought it.
Madame de Monge?
I shall see Gaston before you, madame. Would you like me to give him the letter?
Are you afraid I might open it?
Oh, madame.
I must have crossed Gaston.
The idea. Your husband's mistress would never dare write him
she
here.
She must despise me if she would dare write him here. But I don't say that she is his mistress. I only say that he's making love to her. I say that because I am positive.
But I swear, madame.
Would you dare swear? Seriously swear, Monsieur le Duc?
Well, my oath would prove nothing, for a gentleman has the right to lie in a case of this sort. No matter what the truth is, I have warned you of the danger and suggested a means of escape. I have done my duty as a friend and an honorable man. Do not ask anything else of me.
Pardon me.
Your pardon. Well, well, what's troubling the Duke, Antoinette? And you? You too seem upset.
I've just lost everything I had won in Gaston's affection. An hour ago he called me Marquise. And my father has just brutally reminded him that I was plain Mademoiselle Poirier.
Well, is it impossible to love plain Mademoiselle Poirier?
Possibly my own devotion might have touched him. My own love awakened his. That was beginning. But my father has stopped it. His mistress. Oh, she can't be that yet, can she? You don't really believe she is, do you?
Well, certainly not. Who?
I can understand how he might have been making love to her for the last few days. But if he really is her lover, then he must have begun the day after our marriage. That would be abominable.
Yes, my dear child.
Of course, he didn't marry me with the idea that he would never love me, but he shouldn't have condemned me so soon.
No, no, of course he shouldn't.
Tony, you don't seem very sure.
Well...
Why, you must be mad to suspect a thing of that sort. You know very well my husband wouldn't be capable of it. Oh, tell me, Tony, there's no doubt, is there? You don't think him so low.
Oh, no,
then you can swear he's innocent. Swear it, dear Tony, swear it.
I swear it.
Oh. Then why is she writing a letter to him? This letter?
Well, it's an invitation, probably, to a party of some sort.
It must be very important if she sends it by a footman. To think that the secret of my whole future life is in that envelope.
Why, Toinette, you... Verlet, what are you looking at? Huh? A letter?
Leave it, Father. It's addressed to Monsieur de Prey.
Oh, pretty handwriting. Doesn't smell of tobacco. It's from a woman.
Yes, from Madame de Monge.
What's the matter? Tell me.
Nothing.
Is the Marquis unfaithful to you? By heavens, if that's so...
Father, dear, if you love me, don't.
If I love you?
What have I done to deserve this? And after 3 months of marriage? Why, the day after... He wasn't faithful to me for a single day. He ran to her from my arms. Didn't he feel my heart beating? He didn't understand that I was giving myself and my love completely up to him. Oh, the wretch. I can't live after this.
Boy, you must. You must. What would become of me? The scoundrel. Where are you going?
In my room.
Where, do you want me to come with you?
Thank you, Father.
Oh, leave her. Leave her to cry alone. Tears will make her feel better.
Oh, me, what a marriage. What a marriage.
Oh, come, calm yourself, Poirier. Everything can be arranged. At present, our duty is to bring these two hearts together again.
I know my duty, and I'm going to do it.
Please, don't do anything foolish.
Hello.
Oh.
Are you looking for something, monsieur?
A letter.
From Madame de Monge. Well, you needn't look for it. It is in my pocket.
Do you realize, monsieur, that that is an infamous trick? The act of a dishonest and dishonorable man?
There's only one dishonorable man here, and that is you.
Oh, monsieur le Marquis, Poirier.
Let us drop that. In stealing from me the secret of my fault, you have forfeited the right to judge it. There is but one thing more sacred than the lock of a safe, monsieur, and that is the seal of a letter, because it cannot defend itself.
Yes. Do you think a man can bring despair and sin into our family and not be punished? I'll have a divorce, monsieur.
Divorce? Will you drag all this into court? Where that letter will be read?
In public. Yes, monsieur, in public.
But you're crazy, Poirier. Think of the scandal.
Of course, you're forgetting. A woman will lose her reputation.
Now say something about her honor. I expected that.
Yes, her honor. And if that isn't enough to dissuade you, her ruin...
Oh, so much the better. I'm delighted. She will get all she deserves.
Monsieur.
Well, she'll get no sympathy. to take a husband from his poor young wife after 3 months of marriage.
She is less to blame than I. I am the only one you should accuse.
Well, I am. Am I not? I'm going to see my lawyer at once.
Oh, please, wait until tomorrow, monsieur. I beg you. Just take time to think it over.
I have thought it over.
Well, at least listen to me. You're not naturally vindictive. You're just angry. And now your sorrow makes you so excited that you have no idea of what you're doing.
And I have a right to be angry. And my sorrow is decent and fitting.
But I have told you, monsieur, I confess I am to blame. And I am sorry. But if I promised you never to see Madame de Morgier again, if I swore that I would spend my life in trying to make your daughter happy...
It would merely be the second time that you have sworn.
Very well. You were right this morning. It is lack of an occupation that has been my ruin.
Ah, now you admit it.
Well, what if I took a position?
You, a position.
You have the right to doubt my word, that's true. But I ask you to keep that letter, and if I fail to keep my promise, you can always...
Yes, that's a good guarantee, Poirier.
Of what?
That he will stand by his promise. That he will never see that lady again. That he will take a position, that he will make your daughter happy. What more could you ask?
I see. But what assurance can I have?
The letter.
That's so? Yes, that's so.
Well, do you accept? Anything is better than a divorce.
I don't quite agree with that, but if you insist... Well, for my part, Monsieur Le Marquis, I am willing to accept your offer. Now we have only to consult my daughter.
No need to consult me. I have overheard. My answer is no, Father, no.
No.
It's impossible. All is over between Monsieur de Presles and me.
Well, I can't believe it's you speaking, child.
I tell you, he's going to take a position. He's promised never to see that woman again. He's going to make you happy.
Happiness is no longer possible for me. If Monsieur de Presles has not been able to love me of his own accord, do you think he can ever love me when he's forced to?
Well, Monsieur Le Marquis, speak.
Monsieur de Presles says nothing because he knows I will not believe him.
Oh, please, my child. Think of the scandal. It will affect us all.
It will harm only those who are guilty.
But think of that woman whom you will ruin.
Did she have pity on me? Father, give me the letter. It is not as your daughter that I ask for it, but as the outraged Marquise de Presles.
Oh, but Toinette, I tell you, he is willing to take a position.
Give it to me. Here is my revenge, monsieur. I have you absolutely in my power. You placed your own honor at stake in order to save your mistress. I absolve you in this way.
No, don't tear it up.
Pardon.
Oh, what have you done?
My duty.
Ah, madame, how can I hope to express to you I was so haughty and proud. I thought I had made a misalliance, but I see that you bear my name better than I. My whole life will not suffice to make up for the evil I have done you.
I am a widow, monsieur. No, I say.
I tell you, you still love him.
And I tell you, she hates him.
No, Poirier.
Yes, I say. Evidently, what happened yesterday is not enough for you. I suppose you'd like to see that good-for-nothing carry her off now.
I don't want Antoinette's whole life ruined. But from the way you go about things,
I go about things the way I want to, verily. It's all very well and easy to play the part of mediator. But you're not at sword's point with the Marquis. Once let him carry her off, and you'd be always with her. While I'd be sitting alone in my hole like an old screech owl. Yes, and that's what you'd like. I know you. You're selfish, like all old bachelors.
Oh, take care, Poirier. Are you positive that while you're pushing things to extremes, you yourself are not acting selfishly?
Yeah. So I'm the selfish one, am I?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to safeguard my girl's happiness? Because I have no intention of allowing that blackguardly son-in-law of mine to take my child from me and to make her life a torture? Well, Toinette, say something, can't you? It concerns you more than it does us.
I don't love him anymore. He crushed out of my heart everything that made me love him.
You see? She hates him.
I don't hate him, Father. I'm simply indifferent to him. I don't know him anymore.
That's enough for me.
But my poor Toinon, you're just beginning life. Have you ever thought what would become of a divorced woman? Did you ever consider...
Never mind your sermons.
Oh, well.
She won't have a very hard time of it with her good old father. was going to spend all his time loving her and taking care of her. Yes. We won't leave you alone here and run after countesses. Now smile at your father and say you're happy with him.
Yes, Father. Very happy.
Yeah. You hear that, Vedele?
Yes.
Now, as for your rascal of a husband, well, you've been much too good for it. We have him in our power at last. I'll allow him a thousand crowns a year, and he can go hang himself.
Let him take everything that I have.
Oh, no.
I ask only one thing, never to see him again.
He'll hear from me before long. I've just delivered a last blow.
What have you done?
Offered the Chateau de Pré for sale. The castle of his ancestors.
Have you done that?
Yes, I have.
And would you allow him, Tony?
Don't worry.
The land speculators know their business. And I hope in a month's time that vestige of feudalism will have disappeared and no longer disgrace the land of a free people. They'll plant beets over the site. From the old materials, they will build huts for working men, useful farmers, and vine growers. The park of his fathers will be cut down and the wood sawed into little pieces, which will be burned in the fireplaces of good workmen who have earned the money to buy firewood for themselves. Yes. And I myself will buy a quart or two for my own use.
But he will think this is all revenge.
Yeah, he'll be perfectly right.
He'll think it is I who have...
Oh, don't worry, my dear.
I'm going to see if the signs are ready. They're going to be huge. Oh, huge. Huge enough to cover the great walls all over Paris. For sale, the Chateau de Pré.
Perhaps it's already sold.
Since last evening? Nonsense. I'm going to the printers. I'll attend to this.
Oh, your father's absurd. If we let him have his way, he'd make reconciliation impossible between you and your husband.
But what can you possibly hope for, poor Tony? My love has fallen from too great a height to ever be able to rise again. You've no idea how much Monsieur de Pré meant to me.
Oh, indeed I do.
He was not only a husband, but a master whose slave I was proud to be. I not only loved him, I admired him as a great representative of a former age. Tony, what a horrible awakening I've had.
Madame, Monsieur le Marquis asks whether Madame will see him.
No.
Oh, see him, my dear. Monsieur le Marquis may come in.
What good can come of it?
You need have no apprehension, Madame. I shall not trouble you long with my company. You said yesterday that you considered yourself a widow, and I am far too guilty not to feel that your decision is irrevocable. I have come to say goodbye to you.
What's this, Monsieur?
Yes, I'm going to do the only honorable thing that remains. You should be able to understand that.
But Monsieur...
I understand. Fear nothing for the future, and reassure Monsieur Poirier. There is one position I can take, that of my father, in the army. I'm leaving tomorrow for Africa with Monsieur de Montmirat, who has been good enough to sacrifice his leave of absence for my sake.
But my dear children, don't do anything extreme. Monsieur le Marquis, you are very much at fault. But I'm sure that you ask nothing better than to make amends.
If there were anything I could do... There is nothing. I know. I leave you my name, madame. I am sure you will keep it spotless. I carry away with me the remorse of having troubled your existence. That you are still young and beautiful. And war carries with it happy chances.
I have come to get him.
Goodbye, Monsieur Verdelet. Goodbye, madame. For always.
For always? He loves you, madame.
Quiet.
He loves you desperately. The moment he emerged from the black abyss from which you have helped him, his eyes were opened. He has seen you as you really are.
Mademoiselle Poirier has triumphed over Madame de Morgay. How admirable.
Oh, you are cruel.
She is only doing justice, monsieur. She deserved the purest sort of love. And I married her for her money. I made a bargain which I was not honest enough to abide by. Yes, Antoinette. The very day after our marriage, I sacrificed you out of pure viciousness for a woman who is far beneath you. Your youth, your charm, your purity were not enough. Now, in order to bring light to this darkened heart, it was necessary for you to save my honor twice on the same day. How low I was to resist such devotion. And what does my love now prove? Can it possibly reinstate me in your eyes? When I loved you, I did what any man in my place would have done. In blinding myself to your virtues and your splendid qualities, I did what no one else would have done. You are right, madame, to despise a man who is utterly unworthy of you. I have lost all, even the right to pity myself. I don't pity myself. Come, Hector.
Wait. Do you know where he's going, madame? To fight a duel.
To fight a duel?
What are you saying?
Well, if your wife doesn't love you any longer, there's no reason for hiding the truth. Yes, madame, he's going to fight a duel.
Tony, his life is in danger.
Oh, what difference does that make to you, madame? Is it possible that everything is not over between you, then?
Oh, no. No, everything is over. Monsieur Dupré may dispose of his life as he thinks best. He owes me nothing.
Come, then.
Gaston.
You see, she still loves you.
Oh, madame, if that is true, if I still have a place in your affection, say some word. Give me the wish to live.
Well, what are you doing there, Monsieur le Marquis?
He's going to fight a duel.
A duel? And are you the least bit surprised? Mistresses, duels. That's to be expected. He who has land has war.
What do you mean, Father? Do you imagine...
I'll wager my head on it.
Oh, that's not true, is it, Monsieur? You don't answer.
And you think he would be honest enough to admit it?
I cannot lie, madame. This duel is the last remnant of an odious past.
He's a fool to confess it, the impudence.
And I was led to understand that you still loved me. I was even ready to forgive you while you were on the point of fighting a duel for your mistress. Why, this was a trap for my weakness. Oh, Monsieur le Duc.
He has already told you, madame, that this duel was the remnant of a past which he detests and wants to lay at rest and obliterate.
Very well, monsieur. Then I have a simple plan. If you don't love Madame de Manger any longer, then don't fight for her.
Yes.
What, monsieur? Make excuses?
Yes. You must give Antoinette a proof of your sincerity. And this is the only one which you can give. Then, didn't you just now ask for something to do as an expiation? Time was the only proof she could impose. Aren't you happy that you have a chance and that you can give proof at once? Oh, I know it's a great sacrifice... But if it were any less, could it be a real expiation?
I would gladly sacrifice my life. But my honor, the Marquise de Presles would never accept that sort of sacrifice.
What if you were mistaken, monsieur? What if I would accept it?
Madame, would you ask me to...
To do for me almost as much as you would do for Madame de Manger? Yes, monsieur. For her sake, you consented to forget the past of your family. And now would you refuse to forget a duel which is most offensive to me? How can I believe in your love if it's less strong than your pride?
And then what good would a sword scratch do you? Take my word for it. Prudence is the mother of safety.
See? That is what people will say.
Who would doubt your courage? Haven't you given ample proofs of it?
And then what do you care for the opinion of a lot of know-nothings? You will have the respect of my friends, and that ought to be enough.
You see, madame... People would laugh at me, and you could not love a ridiculous man very long.
No one would laugh at you. Let me take your excuses to the ground, and I promise you that there will be no levity.
What? You two think that...
Yes, my friend. Your affair is not one of those that can't possibly be arranged. The sacrifice your wife is asking affects only your own personal pride.
But to make excuses on the ground...
I would.
Oh, really, Poirier? One might think you were trying to make him fight.
Well, I'm doing all in my power to prevent him.
Come, Gaston, you have no right to refuse this proof to your wife.
Well, no.
Oh,
it's out of the question.
That is the price of my forgiveness.
Then I refuse it, madame. I shan't carry my sorrow very long.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. Don't listen to him, dearie. Wait till he has his sword in hand. He'll defend himself, I tell you. Why, it would be like an expert swimmer trying to drown himself. Once in the water, the devil himself couldn't keep him from saving himself.
If Madame de Manger objected to your fighting, you would give in to her. Oh, goodbye.
Antoinette, for heaven's sake.
She's exactly right.
But excuses. I offer excuses?
I see. You are thinking only of your own pride.
Gaston, give in. I swear, I do the same thing in your place.
Oh. Very well. But to Pogrimaud, give... Go without me, then.
Madame? Are you now satisfied with him?
Yes. Gaston, you have now made up for everything. I have nothing else to forgive you. I believe in you. I am happy. And I love you.
Antoinette.
Now go and fight. Go.
My dearest wife, you have my mother's heart.
Oh, no. My mother's, monsieur.
Yeah, what idiots women are.
You are a good swordsman, are you not?
He's as good as St. George, madame, and he has a wrist of steel. Monsieur Poirier, pray for Pont Grimaud.
Please don't kill the young man.
I let him off with a scratch, because you love me. Come, Hector.
Madame, this letter just arrived. The messenger said it was urgent.
Another letter?
Open it yourself.
It will be the first of yours that I have opened.
I am sure of that.
Why, it's from Monsieur de Pont-Grimaud.
Oh.
My dear Marquis,
snob.
We have both proved our valor.
In different ways, however.
I therefore have no hesitation in telling you that I regret having, for a moment, lost my head.
I was the one who lost mine.
You are the only man in the world to whom I should think of making excuses.
You flatter me, monsieur.
And I have no doubt that you will accept them as gallantly as they are offered.
Exactly.
With all my heart, Vicomte de Pont-Grimaud.
He's not a Vicomte, and he has no heart. Otherwise, his letter is most exact.
Well, everything has turned out splendidly, my dear boy. I hope you have learned your lesson.
For the rest of my life, dear Monsieur Verdelais. From this day on, I begin a serious and calm existence. And in order to break definitely with the follies of my past, I ask you for a place in your office.
In my office? You? A gentleman?
Have I not my wife to support?
You will do as the Breton nobles did when they laid down their swords in Parliament in order to enter the field of commerce and took them up again after having set their houses in order.
Very good, Monsieur le Marquis.
Well, it's now my turn to give in. My dear son-in-law, that is a most liberal sentiment. You really deserve to be a tradesman. And now that we understand each other, let us make peace. Stay with me.
I ask for nothing better than to make my peace with you, monsieur.
Excellent.
But as to staying with you, that is another matter. You have made me understand the happiness which the woodchopper feels when he is master of his own home. I do not blame you, but I cannot help remembering.
Are you going to take away my daughter? Are you going to leave me alone?
I'll come to see you often, father.
And you will always be welcome.
So my daughter is going to be the wife of a tradesman.
No, Poirier. Your daughter will be mistress of the Chateau de Presles.
Eh?
The chateau was sold this morning, and with the permission of your husband, Toinon, it will be my wedding present.
Oh, dear Tony, may I accept it, Gaston?
Monsieur Verdelais is one of those to whom it is a pleasure to be grateful.
I am retiring from business, and if you will allow me, I shall come and live with you, Monsieur le Marquis. We shall cultivate your land together. That is a gentleman's profession.
Well, what about me, then? Aren't you going to invite me? All children are ungrateful. Yes, my poor father was right.
You'll buy some neighboring land and live near us.
That's an idea.
Yes, that's all you have to do. And besides, you're cured of your ambition, aren't you?
Yes.
I think you are.
Yes, yes. Now, let me see. This is 1846. I'll be deputy of the district of Presles in 47 and peer of France in 48.
You have been listening to Barrett H. Clark's translation of Monsieur Poirier's Son-in-Law by Émile Auger and Jules Sandeau, adapted for the Great Play series by Ronald H. McDougall. The performance was directed by Axel Grunberg, and the cast included Junius Matthews as Poirier, Lester Damon as Gaston, Betty Winkler as Antoinette, Alexander Scorby as Hector, Harry Moulton as Vardelay, and Donald MacDonald as the servant. The music was arranged by Tom Bennett, and the orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Stopak. The next great play in this series will be Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus, and we invite you to listen next Sunday at this same hour. Great plays are presented as a public service by the Blue Network and the independent radio stations associated with it.